to our eternal destiny, there are going to be sweet moments like this. It is an incredibly sweet celebration. It's joyous and it's comforting to be here with you all. And yet, there are going to be challenges. There are going to be hardships, afflictions, and sufferings that we are going to have to experience together. The apostolic mission of God, the fulfillment of the Great Commission, comes at great cost. Jesus Christ told us that through many tribulations, we must enter the kingdom of God. And I am here to encourage and exhort you Coastlands as a body to continue to press forward into the things that God has for you. Every single plan and purpose that God has for you, that you would not avoid them because of any concern about suffering, affliction, but actually that as a body, you would continue to learn to embrace the things that come and even welcome things like suffering and affliction as long as they're in the plans and purposes of God. So with that, I'm going to continue on in your 2 Corinthians series. If you could open up your Bibles, I'm sure we'll have the words in the screen behind me, but it's going to be 2 Corinthians 7, and I'm going to be reading verses 2 to 9. Make room in your hearts for us. We have wronged no one. We have corrupted no one. We have taken advantage of no one. I do not say this to condemn you, for I said before that you are in our hearts, to die together and to live together. I am acting with great boldness towards you. I have great pride in you. I am filled with comfort. In all our affliction, I am overflowing with joy. For even when we came into Macedonia, our bodies had no rest, but were afflicted at every turn, fighting without and fear within. But God, who comforts the downcast, comforted us by the coming of Titus. And not only by his coming, but also by the comfort with which he was comforted by you, as he told us of your longing, your mourning, your zeal for me, so that I rejoiced still more. For even if I made you grieve with my letter, I do not regret it. Though I did regret it, for I see that the letter grieved you, though only for a while. As it is, I rejoice not because you were grieved, but because you were grieved into repenting. For you felt a godly grief so that you suffered no loss through us. This is the word of the Lord. 2 Corinthians, or I think you guys say 2 Corinthians, right? 2 Corinthians is about apostolic mission. And actually, we see in this book just Paul speaking to the unavoidable sufferings and afflictions that he experiences as a result of his apostolic calling. And of course, there are joys and comforts as well, as he mentions in this passage. But in order to fulfill his part in fulfilling Jesus' great commission, he's had to face many trials and tribulations. And you can feel just the inner torment of this man who is devoted to Jesus and absolutely has deep affection for the people that he's serving and ministering to, and the pain that it causes him sometimes, the grief that it causes him sometimes as a result of this. He is someone who is prepared to give it all, to lay his life down in order to prepare the bride at Corinth, for her wedding day. Last week, Ben talked about Paul's service of Christ, how in Chapter 6, he talks about it's by great endurance and afflictions, hardships, calamities, beatings, imprisonments, riots, labors, sleepless nights, and hunger through which Paul is advancing the kingdom of Jesus. But more so than the fight that is on the outside, the external things, actually we see in this passage the struggles that he has on the inside, the fears and the pain and the sorrow and the anxieties that he can have. And later on in chapter 11, you're going to be able to see that in addition to all of these things that he experiences on the outside that are hardships, that the thing that he really struggles with is that apart from other things, there is the daily pressure on me of my anxiety for all of the churches. And one of the things I'm really thankful for Coastlands, for Ben and Trina, and for the eldership team, is that you guys actually carry an anxiety for our church here in Thailand. We have the same for you guys as well, and the other churches that we have relationships with. And for Marcia and for me, as the people who have planted the church in Chiang Rai, and now we're going away to the United States for about a year, Now we're starting to feel what it's like to actually leave dear people behind, a beautiful church that you've poured yourself into over 9 years behind, and just trusting that Jesus is going to care for them and that they'll continue to press forward into what God has for them. Now, we've experienced our fair share of external hardships and afflictions, disappointments, insults, injuries, rejections, persecutions, heartaches, betrayals. It comes with the territory. It's a part of being a leader. It's a part of being a Christian and serving his bride. Now, nowhere near what Paul experienced, but enough to have us in our low moments ask the question, why are we doing this again? Our life back in America, when I was a lawyer, when you were a stay-at-home mom, it wasn't too bad, was it? But there just is something that is so wonderful about our Jesus, who knows us, who sees us, who comes in our down moments and comforts us, restores our joy, that allows us to be able to continue forward. But make no mistake, suffering is a normal part of following Jesus. Last week, Ben shared from one of my favorite books, Dietrich Bonhoeffer's The Cost of Discipleship, and the quote he used was, "To endure the cross is not a tragedy, it is the suffering which is the fruit of an exclusive allegiance to Jesus Christ." That's just incredible. It's the fruit. It's the good stuff that results from having an exclusive allegiance to Jesus. This book heavily influenced me in motivating or giving me a passion for Jesus to lead us to Thailand. And there's another quote from this book that I think Ben didn't share last week, but it's this section that says, "The cross is laid on every Christian. The first Christ suffering which every man must experience is the call to abandon the attachments of this world. It is that dying of the old man which is the result of his encounter with Christ. As we embark upon discipleship, we surrender ourselves to Christ in union with his death. We give over our lives to death. Thus it begins. The cross is not the terrible end to an otherwise God-fearing and happy life, but it meets us at the beginning of our communion with Christ. When Christ calls a man, he bids him come and die." Maybe there are some of you, when you put your hand up or you made the altar call and decided, I'm going to believe in Jesus, I'm going to follow him. Maybe right now you're wishing, I wish I would have heard about this book before. I remember I was shocked by this quote. Having been born into a Christian family, being a Christian my whole life, when Christ calls a man, he bids him come and die. A life of following Christ isn't a life of comfort and security, or at least comfort and security as the world knows it. There's plenty of comfort and security in Jesus. It's not about being healthy and happy or prosperous. It is a life of dying to self, taking up our crosses daily to follow him. But you know, it's not all doom and gloom. It's not all bad. And there's this line from this old song that I really love, "The Wonderful Cross. Oh, the wonderful cross bids me come and die and find that I may truly live." Actually, the call to come and die for Jesus' sake is an invitation to find true life. There is no life apart from communion with Christ. But and the incredible thing is, because of that reality, there is joy in the suffering as well. There's an interesting and paradoxical statement by Paul in the passage that I read today. It's curious. It should make us curious and hopeful. In verse 4, he says, "In all of our affliction," this is a man who's been beaten almost to death and imprisoned and all of these things, "in all of our affliction, I am overflowing with joy." Does that make sense? That when he's in prison, he's overflowing with joy. When he has dear friends and loved ones, killed for the sake of the gospel. He overflows with joy. How does that make sense? How can that be? I actually come from a place in Thailand where the predominant religion, 90% plus, is Buddhism. And actually, the Buddhist religion is all about suffering. It's one of the Four Noble Truths. And they believe that the most important truth you need to know is that all of life is suffering. And the rest, the Eightfold Path, all of the things that Buddhists are doing is to try to escape and avoid suffering at all cost. You need to be detached from the things of this world. You don't need material possessions. Actually, love between two human beings is a bad thing because that attachment can actually lead to suffering if there's conflict or there is separation. People talk about nirvana. Nirvana isn't going to heaven to experience joy. Nirvana is the hope that if you somehow please the karmic system, you might be extinguished and cease to feel anything at all so that you can avoid the suffering that comes with existing as a human being or any other life form. And Christianity is so different. We are not trying to avoid suffering at all cost. In some ways, if it means that we're following Jesus, we run to it, we run at it. But this is what Peter says about this. In this you rejoice, though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been grieved by various trials, so that the tested genuineness of your faith, more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Though you have not seen him, you love him. Though you do not now see him, you believe in him and rejoice with joy that is inexpressible and filled with glory. When we experience trial, when we experience tribulations, suffering, and afflictions, we rejoice because we know that Jesus is going to be revealed, and we know that at that day, when we see Jesus with our own eyes, we're going to be filled with an inexpressible joy that is filled with glory. There is no amount of happiness, nothing glorious or joyful that you've experienced, not even the crows winning and getting to the top of the table. There is nothing that you've experienced in this life or that you will experience in this life that can be compared. Like, we won't even have the right words to be able to express the joy we're going to feel when we go to heaven. Gavin, 2 weeks ago, spoke out of 2 Corinthians 4 in this beautiful passage. For this light momentary affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison as we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen. For the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal. Living out the Great Commission, fulfilling the purposes of God for this planet, actually means that we're going to have to face affliction and suffering. But it's not a bad thing because it is an opportunity for us, like Paul, to overflow with joy and to one day be able to experience that inexpressible joy that Peter is talking about. But the only way that we can experience that and continue to have the courage to be able to walk into the things that are difficult and challenging is if we are able to live with spiritual eyes. If we are more focused on the unseen things that are eternal than on the transient things of this world that we can touch and see with our own eyes. It requires actually living with a proper future orientation. One of the things about living in Thailand and moving, actually it was my second cross-cultural move. I was born in Korea and had to adjust cross-culturally to the United States, and then we moved back to Asia and had to readjust back to being in Thailand. And I've had to learn, oh, you know, people in different parts of the world are different. Americans generally think everybody is like Americans. I believe the Chinese are the same. But actually, if you go to different places, people have little differences in language and in terms of wiring and the values and customs and those types of things. And one of the things we've had to learn is around time orientation. So there are people who are past-oriented, there are people that are present-oriented, and then there are people that are future-oriented. So past-oriented people, they highly value traditions and history. They're strongly connected to their roots. They prioritize stability. They prioritize wisdom from past experiences. And apparently, of course, this is, you know, there are exceptions, and this is just a generalization, but on a population level, in terms of averages, apparently the Brits are kind of like that. They're past-oriented people. I mean, if you've ever been to the UK, it's every place you go, it's just the full English breakfast. Yeah, can I get a Denver omelet? No, it's just full English. Future-oriented people, they like to plan, and they like to prepare. They like to invest in the future. They like to set goals and achieve them. They're self-disciplined, and they're good at delaying gratification. And future-oriented people, actually, Americans tend to be future-oriented, and Aussies tend to be future-oriented. I don't know if you guys would agree with that, but when I go around and walk around your great cities and see places like Perth and Sydney, I'm like, no, this is a great civilization that knows how to plan and prepare and execute on those plans. Present-oriented people, they prioritize what will bring them the most pleasure and satisfaction in the present. They are all about the here and now rather than the future. They don't think about the past. They don't care about the future. They prioritize immediate gratification. And the place where I'm at in Thailand actually happens to be a much more present-oriented place than where I grew up in the United States. And there's just this extreme example. The Lord gave us an opportunity to take the gospel to an unreached people group village, the Red Lahu. And in this village, because of how cheap methamphetamines are, it's cheaper than coffee, it's cheaper than beer. Most of the men in the village are drug addicts, maybe about 70%. And I went there one evening, and it wasn't just the men, but women, children, sadly, and elderly people, they are all just high in the afternoon. That's what they do to get by in life. And we thought one of the ways that we can break the kingdom into this area is to help with the drug addiction. So we took two of the people who had come to faith and were wanting to be sober. We sent them off to a drug rehab place for about 6 months. And once they detoxed from that, they came back and we gave them housing, we gave them some education, and we gave them jobs so that they might be able to become upstanding citizens and support their own lives. And what we found is that these people who had grown up in these villages just doing sustenance living, the way that they get by is they go into the jungle, they'll catch little animals, they will harvest honey, they'll gather the fruit. There's some rice farming as well, but it is a very present kind of oriented lifestyle where they wake up, what am I going to eat today? They eat it, and then they're happy, and then we'll wake up the next day and do the same thing. And so we gave them jobs working at a restaurant, just washing dishes, and it was more money than they had ever seen. I mean, it was minimum wage for Thai standards, but it was more money than they had ever seen. And what would happen is they would get their paycheck at the end of the month, and it was just cash. They would take it, and oh my goodness, they have no concept that maybe I can invest some of this, maybe I can save some of this into a bank. So I'm rich. And so they would take their motorbikes and go back to the villages, and they would spend all of that money until it was gone. They would buy every single friend beer, and of course that would lead to purchasing drugs again, and they would go right back into the drug addiction. And we had to do this two or three times with these guys. And the last time we said, we're only going to give you half the money now, and the half we'll hold on to for later in the month. You can come back and get it. Now, remember what happened last time. If you take this money and spend it all, you're going to be out tomorrow. You're not going to have any money to spend next month. But it was just so frustrating. You'd hand them the money. It's more money than they've ever seen. And they would go right back into the villages and spend it all until it was all gone. That's an extreme example of what a present-oriented person is. Sounds silly to us, right? Sounds irresponsible. Or imagine someone who decides, I'm going to have a great day today. And so they go and sell their house. They go sell all their cars. They go to their bank and they pull out all of their savings into cash. And then they walk over to a casino. And they say, man, bring the drinks, bring all of the food. And then just spends all that money and gambles it away. I mean, as people from kind of civilized Western worlds, I mean, that sounds, it's crazy. It'd be insane to do that. But sometimes we do that. We don't have a far enough outlook. And I just wanted to show this graph. We look at this graph. This is your life, and Australians apparently live on average about 83 years. Kudos to Ruth. You're amazing. Thank you, Lord. And so when we look at the long period of 83 years of our lives, the beginning and the end, we recognize that one day is just another dot. It's a point on this timeline. And if we spend everything in one day, and it means that the rest of our lives, we're not going to have anything. It would be really irresponsible to live in that kind of a way. But you know, our lives, which seem so long to us, 83 years, in the context of eternity that goes this way forever and goes this way forever, is nothing but a little dot. And so many Christians who would die before they would waste everything that they have for their lives on one day, everything that we have for eternity, have no problems just spending it and focusing on just our life. This is what Paul is talking about and why suffering should be so easy for us to endure when we think about this timeline. Romans 8:18, "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed to us." Yeah, sure, we will lose everything here in this little moment in time. Honestly, over the course of 80 years, how much could we really suffer? How much affliction could we really face? When actually those things that we do in that moment in time is going to mean that we're going to be able to enjoy, rejoice, worship Jesus, and experience a glory and a joy that is inexpressible. It doesn't make sense to hold so precious this little moment in time in the context of the eternal destiny that we have. We can't live with a present orientation for this life. We are future-oriented people, and I just want to encourage us, let's extend this out and have a future orientation that is more in line with the reality that we believe in Scripture about this is just a rehearsal, the real thing's coming. So what is this glory that is to be revealed? Revelation 5, 6, and 10. "And between the throne and the four living creatures and among the elders, I saw a lamb standing as though it had been slain with seven horns and with seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God sent out into all the earth. The lion of the tribe of Judah, but also the lamb that was slain. He is going to be revealed in the fullness of his glory." That's what we're looking forward to. And in response, they, which is us, sang a new song saying, "Worthy are you to take the scroll and to open its seals, for you were slain, and by your blood you ransomed people for God from every tribe and language and people and nation, and you have made them a kingdom and priests to our God, and they shall reign on the earth." This is one song of at least 15 in the book of Revelations. Some people say, up to 28 songs or song fragments are in the book of Revelation. And the reason why I think there's so many songs in Revelation is because it's alerting us to the reality that when we see Jesus in his fullness, when we see that glory revealed, we're not going to be able to help ourselves. We're not going to be able to control ourselves from singing these wondrous songs praising our King. But I will just tell you this. Not all of the songs are going to mean the same for everybody. And not all of the songs are going to mean as much to everyone. On Friday night, Ben graciously allowed our family to go and watch footy. Quite an experience, man. It is an incredible sport. It took me about a quarter and a half to to figure out what the game was. But once I figured out what a mark was, I was like, this is an amazing sport. And I really enjoyed it. And thankful that the Crows won, because I think Ben would have maybe blamed me and said I brought him for nothing. And at the end of the victory, though, there was a song that played, and it was an old-sounding song. And how does it go? We're the pride of South Australia, and we're known as the Adelaide Crows. And, like, the whole stadium, just joyous, and they were just singing this song together. Everybody knew it by heart. I'm sure it means a lot. I'm sure that for some of them, they've been singing it for decades. They've been singing it with their grandparents, singing it with their children. It means a lot. Singing it in victory, wanting to sing it in loss, just the things that you've spent your time doing. The song meant absolutely nothing to me. And that's not because I'm a Port fan, okay? Hold on. I haven't invested anything into Crow fandom. I got to enjoy the victory. I wore the scarf that Ben forced on me. Actually was happy to wear. I just didn't want to get beat up at the stadium. But I haven't spent time. I haven't spent energy. I haven't paid a price. I haven't paid a cost. I haven't suffered through the difficult times. I don't have a past history of victories. And so the song means absolutely nothing to me. But you know what did mean to me, though, mean something to me, was during the halftime, for some reason, they were playing Sweet Caroline. Do you guys know that song? Where it began, I can't begin to know when, but then I know it's going strong. Look, I'm Korean, and you don't want me to get started doing karaoke in here? But can I tell you that when that song was playing, I was singing my heart out, as were my kids, and we were crying. It was my dad's favorite song. He died 2 years ago and made it so that I couldn't come and visit you guys. The song reminds me of my dad every time. And it made me think, man, I've been to sporting contests with him. Really wish I could have enjoyed that footy match with him. And I told my kids, you know what? It's okay. There's going to be a time we're going to get to heaven and we're going to sing this song with him again. It meant something because of my shared experience. We understand that about songs. My dear brothers and sisters of Coastlands, we only get one shot at this. Buddhists in Thailand think you're just born again and again and again. One day is no different from the next. One life is no different. We get one shot at this. We get one tiny little sliver and moment in time so that we can enjoy eternity songs forever. Peter 4:13, but rejoice insofar as you share Christ's sufferings, that you may also rejoice and be glad when his glory is revealed. What you suffer for Jesus has an impact on how you'll feel when his glory is revealed in its fullness, and how glad you'll be, and how much your heart will rejoice. That's why Paul is saying, in all my affliction, my joy overflows. Jesus invites us, Jesus invites you to join him on mission as he redeems the lost from every tribe and tongue. By doing so, like Paul, we have the privilege of joining Jesus in his suffering and suffering in his stead. Colossians 1:24, Paul says, now I rejoice in my sufferings for your sake, and in my flesh I am filling up what is lacking in Christ's affliction for the sake of his body, that is the church. Jesus died once and for all. He's the lamb that was slain. It's by his blood that the nations are ransomed. And yet, the gospel reach hasn't reached its full potential yet. And in order for the gospel to reach the fullness of Adelaide, to reach the fullness of Australia, to reach the fullness of Asia Pacific and beyond to every one of the four corners of the earth, actually it requires Christians to suffer and join in Jesus' suffering. But it's an invitation, not just an invitation to suffer, it's an invitation to experience inexpressible joy. And some of you might be wondering, I don't know what it's going to be like when Jesus is revealed like that on the last day. Is he really going to be that glorious? Is he going to be worth it? And all I can tell you is he is. From what I've experienced, and I'm here to tell you that whatever it is, whatever suffering and affliction that I experienced over the 9 years in serving the Lord in Thailand, it's worth it. It actually can't compare. He's so worthy. And he's ready to prove his worth to you if you don't know his worth yet. But you have to pay a price. You pay a price and you compare it to Jesus. Is he worth it? Yes. Let me pay more of a price. Is he worth it? Yes. Okay, I'm going to give you a little bit more. And see if you're still worth it. Yes. And it's never ending until the day we see him face to face. For the joy that was set before him, Jesus endured the cross, despising the shame. You know, for the joy that was set before him, he was happy to die on the cross. He did that for you. Actually, in his eyes, you're worth it. And not just for the joy that he was going to get from you. And don't get me wrong, you bring him joy. He delights in you. He loves you. He takes pleasure in you. But he also did it for the joy that he wants to give you. He knows that the inexpressible joy that Peter is talking about is going to outweigh whatever suffering he endured, and whatever suffering he's inviting you to endure. Yes. So let us set aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us.